Welcome to Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast number 45. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. An update on Jack Herer, who had a heart attack 3 weeks ago at the Portland Hempstock Festival. Jack is still hanging in there and has shown signs of activity. He's opened his eyes to hear some guitar music, but so far he still has a very long way to go. Jack, there are many people in this world who thank you for your hard work, and we hope that you get better soon. Conspiracy. It's a word that causes many people to have all sorts of emotional reactions, whether or not they've actually investigated what the conspiracy is about. Some say that only the foolish believe in conspiracies, but the word conspiracy is defined as 1. A secret agreement between two or more people to perform an unlawful act. 2. A plot to carry out some unlawful or illegal act, especially a political plot. 3. A group of conspirators banded together to achieve some harmful or illegal purpose. Every day in courts throughout this country and throughout the world, people are tried and convicted of conspiracies. Our history books are literally filled with page after page of plots, assassinations, and conspiracies. Should we believe that our politicians and bankers of today don't commit such acts? And if they did, is it really true that government is so incompetent that they could never keep a secret? Or is it really that the general masses generally don't bother to look into a conspiracy to verify it when they hear about it, instead taking the easy path of ignorance is bliss rather than critical thinking? If I were to bet, I'd put my money on the latter. What if almost all conspiracies to one degree or another were true? And what if, like a puzzle, each conspiracy is a single piece of a larger picture, not to be understood clearly until all of the pieces are put together? Today and next Monday, I interview one of the world's greatest historians. He's also a man who has all of the pieces to the global conspiracy puzzle, considered the greatest conspiracy theorist alive. But did he create these conspiracy theories? Or did he discover real conspiracies? In honor of free speech and critical thinking, I present you with the most powerful interview I've done to date with one of the most controversial and yet respected people in the entire world, Eustace Mullins, the last living protege of Ezra Pound. Eustace joins me for this explosive two-part series on the history of the Federal Reserve, World War I, World War II, the Rothschilds, J.P. Morgan, the New World Order, banking, Zionism, farming, and the state of world affairs. Eustace is now 86 years old, so he'll be joining me with his only protege, Jesse Lee, who will help guide our discussion through the many rabbit holes of history, uncovering some of the most startling information many of you have ever heard. And lastly, and most importantly, my disclosure. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this program are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself or Gnostic Media. Please contact the guests of this show if you have contentions regarding their work. Most importantly, attack and dissect the message. Don't attack the messengers. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can go to www.gnosticmedia.com or send me an email to contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thanks for listening.
So you want to do an interview?
Yeah, that's what I called you about, and I guess Jesse's going to be in on the interview too there?
Well, I guess so, yes.
Okay. Well, it's good to speak with you. I've definitely heard a lot about you and your work, and I'm excited to have you on my show. And this is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast number 45. And Eustace, would you mind telling the audience a little bit about yourself and where you come from, what your educational background is, and that sort of thing?
Oh, yes. Well, I was educated at Washington Lee University in Virginia.
What can you tell us about your background, or, you know, just growing up? Can you talk a little bit about your life growing up and a little bit about who Eustace Mullins is?
Oh, well, I think everybody knows who I am. I'm the protege of Ezra Pound.
All right, well, pretend for a moment that you might be reaching some people that have never heard of you before.
All right. Well, I'm known as the last protege of Ezra Pound, and I got him released from the insane asylum where Rockefeller had put him there.
Maybe I can help a little bit in bringing up a little bit of information, kind of a biography of Eustace Mullins. He was born in 1923 in Roanoke, Virginia, and 11 years old, his father moved the family to Stanton, Virginia, and Eustace was there until about a year ago. He owned a house there until 6 years ago, and the house was sold out from under him, and he was put in a nursing home in the area. And a year ago, he was taken out of that nursing home and taken to Texas. And that's where he and I came into contact with each other. So the time between the time he was 11 years old and 6 years ago, which would have been 03, is where his whole life's work has transpired during that time. So he met Ezra Pound in April of 1949. So, Eustace, why don't you pick it up from there? And you might even tell the audience how you met Ezra Pound.
Well, I was asked to go see him because he had no visitors in the insane asylum. And I went out there. And Ezra and I hit it off, and I became his protege. And Ezra asked me to write the history of the Federal Reserve System, which I did. And then later on, I got all the charges, the fake charges, were all good from Alger Hiss. And
maybe the audience would like to know a little bit about Ezra Pound and how important he was.
He was very important because single-handedly he tried to stop the Second World War, which Roosevelt was instrumental in getting going.
And he was preaching against that from where?
From the East Coast. He was broadcasting to the East Coast of the United States.
But he was not on the East Coast. He was reporting from
Radio Rome.
He was in Rome, and he was in Italy and reporting from Radio Rome that was broadcast here from the East Coast.
And Roosevelt got Alger Hiss to attack Pound because he wanted to get the war going.
And Ezra Pound was reporting in the 30s. And in the 40s?
Yes.
And warning America, do not let Franklin Roosevelt get you into this war.
And Roosevelt retaliated by having Alger Hiss indict as a Pound for treason, a capital crime.
Now, wasn't Ezra Pound a poet, and why was he so threatening just to have a show on Radio Rome?
Well, he was so threatening because it was so imperative that Roosevelt get us into World War II because he wanted to save Russia from communism.
Now, let me ask you this: is it true that the Rothschilds and the main banking families bankrolled the Bolshevik Revolution and Russia's whole rise into communism?
Well, all the rich people were for communism, including Woodrow Wilson and quite a few others.
Who
was it known that Woodrow Wilson was a communist early on?
He had joined the Communist Party in 1910 at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. And he was a protege of Algiers, too.
Was it important to get Woodrow Wilson elected as president?
It was imperative because they were planned the Federal Reserve to be passed in 1913.
What was the reason that the Rothschilds and the rich bankers needed the Federal Reserve Act passed?
They wanted to save England, and all the rich people were for communism at that time.
Who did they need to save England from?
German competition, which was driving England into bankruptcy.
So they had to get... why didn't England just attack Germany?
Well, England was bankrupt and couldn't afford the war.
So they had to get the only solvent nation in the world to fund their war.
So it was basically because of England's own debt-based usury money system that England was bankrupt in the first place. Wasn't it the same banking system that they came and put on the U.S.?
That was the Bank of England, owned by the Rothschild.
Right. And
which was financing England's Industrial Revolution.
Isn't that the same, England was bankrupt, though, because they had a debt-based, user-based economic system, though. Is that correct?
Well, the Rothschilds are bankrupting them because the Rothschilds always bankrupt everybody.
Right.
They coerced them into the Industrial Revolution and through the 19th century. And by the end of the 19th century, all of their equipment and everything was outdated, and Germany was gearing up to take over the Industrial Revolution. England was now bankrupt and couldn't tool up with new equipment, and the Germans were building a lot better equipment and a lot better automobiles, and the automobile industry was new, and they were far outranking England.
Still today.
The same today. So the whole thing was a competition and jealousy between England and Germany even then. So they were required to establish the Federal Reserve here so that they could borrow money. The Rothschilds had already got them into such debt that the Rothschilds needed a new pocket to get into. And who was responsible, Eustace, who was responsible for getting the Federal Reserve established?
Well, the Rothschilds.
And through whom? Who was their puppet?
Well, they didn't have any puppet because Baron Albert Rothschild of London financed the whole Federal Reserve system and got it passed by Congress in this country.
But wasn't Woodrow Wilson their puppet that they needed to get established as president?
Well, he was a communist puppet.
Right. He was their communist puppet, and yeah, they're all communist.
And Roosevelt had to save communism from the German armies.
That was Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes.
And so it was Teddy Roosevelt's responsibility to get everything set up for the Federal Reserve to be established, and that's the reason we had the 1907. What was the 1907 debacle?
Panic was 1907.
And that was Teddy Roosevelt's responsibility. Who caused the panic of 1907?
That was a single-handed operation of J.P. Morgan, who was a Rothschild agent.
So all these things are orchestrated well in advance.
They were orchestrated because the Rothschilds had as their goal in World War II setting up the State of Israel as the homeland of the Jewish people.
So who was Teddy Roosevelt's hand-picked agent that was the next president to get the Federal Reserve established? Was it Howard Taft, William Howard Taft?
Yes, William Howard Taft.
But he didn't play ball.
He was a Republican candidate for president in 1912, and Woodrow Wilson had been assigned the job of getting the Federal Reserve passed by Congress.
So did Woodrow Wilson actually win the election?
No, it was he never won the election. He was very disliked in Washington.
So how did he become president then?
Because the he was a handpicked candidate of the Rothschilds and the First City National Bank of New York.
And Howard Taft actually won re-election in 1912.
Yes.
How did they buy him off, or what did they offer him to keep him quiet?
They offered him the post of defense counsel of the Supreme Court of the United States.
And how long did he have that job?
8 years from 1912 to 1920.
So he knew that he could do a better job for America. He was a true patriot, and he knew
yes, he was always a patriot.
He knew he could do a better job in that office.
Oh yes,
as chief counsel to the Supreme Court.
That's right.
And he allowed the presidency being robbed from him to go unabased.
Yes, so Roosevelt was acting as the agent for the Communist Party by saving Stalin's regime from the Hitler's armies in Germany.
But you're jumping ahead to Franklin Roosevelt. Let's stay back with the Federal Reserve and it being established. As soon as Woodrow Wilson was in as president, he got the Federal Reserve passed.
Yes, he did.
And what was the very first act that the Federal Reserve did? What was the first loan that they made?
$400 million to England to make it possible for England to start World War One.
And that was the reason that they had to get before they could start World War One, they had to get the Federal Reserve.
They had to have it signed. The act had to be signed by Woodrow Wilson.
That was the only way that they could use the banking system to fund both sides then.
Oh, yes. The Rothschilds always fund both sides.
England is now able to declare war on Germany. And by 1917, had they won the war?
No, Britain had stalemated Germany, and Germany was ready to give up the war.
And England was ready to give up the war also because they'd spent their $400 million.
Yes.
So they were at a stalemate. Who was it that warned England not to do the sign an armistice with England?
The Rothschilds were still calling the shots, and the Rothschilds had decided to bring the United States into war on the side of England, and to bribe them to do that, they offered a Jewish homeland for the Jews in Israel, which was duly passed.
And what was that act called?
That was the Balfour Report. And the Rothschilds were given a letter from England which authorized a Jewish homeland for the Jewish people if they would declare war against Germany.
Or continue the war against Germany.
Yes.
So the Balfour Declaration was in 1917.
Yes.
That's what brought America into the war.
Oh, yes.
So then by 1919, had America and Britain won the war against Germany?
No, it did not. The Jewish people proved to be a powerful ally, but the war is essentially stalemated.
So now all the nations, including the United States, are bankrupt.
Yes.
We are responsible for $400 million that the Federal Reserve loaned to England. And then we geared up for the war for, between 1917 and 1919. So now the United States is bankrupt.
Yes, things are going the Rothschilds' way.
So the Rothschilds had to bring the war to a close, a cessation of hostilities, as you describe it, and an armistice. But what brought about the armistice in the end of the recess?
Well, the medical profession, because they had inoculated all the armies involved in World War I with flu vaccine.
What flu vaccine was that?
The swine flu vaccine.
So they inoculated all the soldiers. They began where?
In France and England and Germany.
Well, didn't they start it here in America?
It was produced in America, and American soldiers were all inoculated.
And so then they inoculated all the armies on every side, including the German army.
And this led directly to the great Spanish flu epidemic of 1918.
Which killed how many people?
100 million people.
So they made a great fortune on the war, then they made a great fortune on the vaccines, and then their ultimate goal, which is destroy nations, armies of nations, they murdered 100 million people worldwide.
Yes, they're very successful.
And that brought about the recess of World War II.
Yeah, the World War I had to be halted because of the great casualties among the troops, 100 million people.
Now, the Rothschilds had some more things in mind, but they're just having the World War I recess until it can be brought back into play later on.
Yes.
So they've got some other things in mind for America and the world itself, but one of those things was the bank crash of 1921.
Oh, yes, the agricultural depression.
They had set that up in 1913 also, after the Federal Reserve was passed, because the Federal Reserve loaned to all the private banks cheap money at 2% prime rate. Is that true?
Yes. And then the Federal Reserve increased the bank rate to the farmers to 8% and bankrupted the farmers. That was the agricultural depression.
And that was in 1920 and 21.
Yes.
They started out with the 2% to the bank's prime rate, and then they raised the prime rate to the banks at 8%. That caused the banks to crash and the turnover of much of the American farmland to the Rothschilds or to the Federal Reserve.
Yes.
So then they also orchestrated the 1929 stock market crash. Is that correct?
Yes, that was a direct result. It was a follow-up to the agricultural depression.
They manipulated the stock market just like Amschel Rothschild did in the 1700s.
In England?
In England, yes.
Yeah, Joe Kennedy was one of those who profited by that. Joe Kennedy only had $1 million, and by profiting from the crash, he was worth $100 million.
So he multiplied 10 times.
10 times.
During that time.
Yeah.
And he was a rum runner or booze producer in America.
Yeah, he was a partner of Meyer Lansky in the bootleg operation.
And that's where he got his $10 million fortune.
Yes.
And then he multiplied it with the 29 stock market crash manipulation.
And that financed his son's political campaigns. And JFK became president. And Bobby Kennedy was running for the president, too.
So what happened in the early 30s, the Depression was caused by what?
By Rothschild manipulation of American credit.
And they financed, again, they financed the farmers all throughout the Midwest, the ones that hadn't already lost their land in the 20s, the early 20s.
What triggered our great crash of 1929 was the Federal Reserve was trying to help England get back on the gold standard. And they sent $20 billion in gold to England to help them. And that caused a shortage of money on Wall Street and brought about the great crash.
And at the same time, they're trying to get more farmland, and they coerced the farmers in the Midwest to plow up all their grassland and replant it. But that took the top cover off, and that's what created the Dust Bowl.
Yes.
And the starvation throughout America and all the soup lines and whatnot.
It was a nationwide economic crash, the Great Depression.
That also changed more farmland into their hands. They did the same thing in the 50s then.
Oh, yes.
And in the current times. So back to...
This is why the farmers were walking into banks in the 80s and 90s and just killing bankers right out.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what they did in the 80s as well. That's their number one ploy other than outside the wars and financing both sides. They're out to destroy the generations, which every war takes out the 18 to 20-year-olds, destroys a whole generation of people. That's what the Revolutionary War did. That's what the Civil War did. That's what the War of 1812 did. They needed all these... Every one of these wars has to do with the bankers stirring up one side and the other and then financing both sides.
And Woodrow Wilson signed an armistice with the Germans, which allowed the Germans to get out of the war.
That was the end of World War One, which had no end. It was just a recess.
It was a cessation of hostilities.
Right. So then in the 30s, England is once again gearing up to war, which is why they needed the $20 million gold shot in the arm.
Well, World War II was organized by Franklin D. Roosevelt to totally wipe out England. They wanted to exterminate the entire English people. And so Woodrow Wilson...
The English people or the German people?
The German people.
So Woodrow Franklin Roosevelt was gearing up for the war.
Yes, that's how he came into contact with Ezra Pound, because Ezra Pound protested along with Charles Lindbergh, and he was trying to keep us out of the war.
Ezra Pound was the greatest poet of the 20th century, but he was also the greatest historian of that era, of the first half of the 20th century at least.
That's right.
And so he recognized what World War One was all about, and the Federal Reserve had brought it all about.
And Franklin D. Roosevelt was a dedicated communist who had three communist assistants: Alger Hiss, our greatest traitor, Lachlan Curry, and Harry Dexter White. All three of these KGB agents directed reported directly to Stalin, so he was practically the sub-dictator of the entire communist world.
And everyone here in the U.S., including FDR and Hiss and all the rest, and Churchill and all the ones in England, were following Stalin's lead.
Yes.
But Stalin himself wasn't in control. He was just the figurehead in Russia. Who was his puppet handler?
Averell Harriman of the Northern Pacific Railroad.
He was in Russia at that time, correct?
Yes. He was actually substituting for the dictator Stalin, who had a nervous breakdown.
And so he was pulling all the shots and pulling all the strings worldwide of England and of America.
Yes.
And so Ezra Pound knew all of these things, and as the great poet and historian that he was, he got on Radio Rome and was warning America in particular, don't let FDR get you into this, continue this war.
Yes.
Let me ask you about the Bolshevik Revolution. Who is behind the Bolshevik Revolution and for what purpose?
The British Crown. See, King George V was the King of England at that time, and they were fighting Germany and supporting England.
There are these rumors going around that say part of the Bolshevik Revolution was started by the Zionist Jewish movement. Is there any truth to that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so that's why the Balfour Declaration allowed the Jews to come into the war on the side of England. The establishment of Israel as a nation for the Jewish people was a direct result of World War I.
What most people don't realize is that Russia was the breadbasket of all of Europe, and it was the white kulak farmers who made Russia such a great and wealthy nation. They weren't an industrial nation, and we tend to apply the first world raid on people because of their industrial might. But Russia actually was the richest nation in the world at the time because of their farming practices.
And the Tsar of Russia was an enemy of the Jews because he was trying to keep them under control.
And that was Tsar Nicholas.
Tsar Nicholas. So the Jacob Schiff murdered the entire Romanov family.
Jacob Schiff. Now, I think that's what Jan is referring to. How did Jacob Schiff get involved in the Bolshevik Revolution or the whole situation?
He came in through the back door by being paid by the Japanese to declare war against Russia. And they easily won the war against Russia. And it led directly to the Bolshevik Revolution.
Why were the Japanese so intent on getting war against Russia? Does that back up to what was the Boxer Rebellion?
The Boxer Rebellion in China had frustrated the Chinese, and Russia was very weak at the time.
And what did Japan have to do with all of it?
Japan was hired by Jacob Schiff to declare war against Russia, and this led to the Bolshevik Revolution and the murder of the Romanov family, because they murdered the entire family.
Now, a minute ago you said that that Tsar Nicholas was trying to keep the Jews under control in Russia. What does that mean exactly?
Well, the Jewish people are exploiting the Russian peasants and taking all their money, and they were very poor. So, and the Jews were the Bolshevik Party, which was agitating to attack their own family.
Now, when you refer to the Jews, you're not talking about the whole race or the whole people known as the Jews, but only specific ones that are causing all the problems, and they're known as...
No, they were the Zionist Party.
So the Zionist Party that is entirely made up of part of the race of the Jews are the ones responsible, not the Jewish race.
No, not the Jewish race, but the Bolsheviks were a fanatical, murderous unit, and they managed to bring down Russia in the Bolshevik Revolution and wipe out the Romanov family.
Now, you have been labeled as a hate monger.
Right, and a rabid anti-Semite as well, I've heard. How do you answer to that?
Well, that definitely spent millions of dollars to brand me all over the world as the world's number one anti-Semite.
Are you an anti-Semite?
I had never had any trouble with the Jewish people in my life. But I was a political victim because I was fired from the Library of Congress where I was writing the history of the Federal Reserve System, and so I lost my job because of the ADL. See, the ADL is able to have anyone fired in this country and deprive them of an income.
Are they the most powerful agency in America?
Absolutely. They deal entirely in blackmail and extortion, and they will get their way every time.
Are they in control of the FBI?
Oh, yes. The FBI signed up with the ADL in 1936 with Philip Klutzig, and they became an agency of the FBI.
How important is AIPAC?
AIPAC is very important. The ADL's Washington arm is the AIPAC in Washington, D.C., and they control the Congress of the United States.
Now, I had former top U.S. Justice Department prosecutor John Loftus on my show last year in December, and he said that AIPAC and the Zionist Jews did not play an important part in U.S. government. Is that true at all?
I played a very important part. AIPAC became the controlling arm of the United States government and the FBI.
How important would you say AIPAC is today? Do they have any influence on who is elected as president or anything like that?
They pick and choose the candidates for both the Republican and Democratic Party. They have no opposition.
You would say that that what John Loftus said, and he's investigated. He wrote a book linking the Nazis to the Vatican. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but
that is Eric Phillips.
But he would be incorrect then about the influence of all of that and the
importance. Oh yes, Eric Phillips had been a specialist in that, and he identified the whole operation.
Well, it's interesting too because you know he's U.S. intelligence, and if you're saying that that these people control the U.S. intelligence, then that would be a logical explanation behind that.
Well, they can completely control the FBI and the CIA. The CIA was set up by the British as an arm of an imperial general staff.
So the CIA belongs to Britain.
It belongs to Britain. It's an arm. It's an arm of the Imperial General Staff.
All right. So, how much deeper does this rabbit hole go? What's all of this stuff that you talk about on radio shows that gets the radio show host fired and things like that? Let's go there.
Oh, well, I'm the one that's been fired.
I've heard you say that you've had some probably 40 or 50 radio show hosts fired for discussing things in interviews that you weren't supposed to talk about. So,
well, I built up quite a following among the radio hosts, and I was able to get all my information out, and the ADL was retaliated by making sure that I only appeared on any talk show, I only appeared once, and then I was not heard from again.
And all the talk show hosts were warned off from having you on their show.
Yes, because they control the advertising of the radio hosts.
Well, you know, and that's why this is not the show is not funded by corporate advertising at all. It's funded by donations. So we don't have anybody, any corporate underwriters who can tell us what we can and can't say. So whatever
well, rabbit holes, Jan, go very deep, and there's many, many rabbit holes. Eustace wrote about the Federal Reserve, and that's one of the deepest rabbit holes. But the other is murder by injection. When he found that there were no true history of these different things. So there was nothing on the AMA, the American Medical Association. So he wrote about the whole American Medical Association, included in that a little bit on the Food and Drug Administration. So every one of the administrations, we're talking about the pharmaceutical and medical. Then he wrote The Rape of Justice, which shows that our whole judicial system is a foreign judicial system. What does BAR, which is stand for, which is in all of the courts, it tells who our courts are and what the flag is in the courts. It's an admiralty, British admiralty flag with the admiralty fringe on it.
The gold trim, right?
Right, the gold trim.
That basically means that you're under martial law when you're in the courtroom?
Right, and this is a ship. It's an admiralty ship of the British Empire, which is what BAR stands for. It's British Accredited Registry, not Regency, but Registry. And so when you go into the ship, into the court, you are come under that registry and under their flag, the British flag. So these are, not only do we have a foreign bank, we have a foreign court that tries all of our people and then puts us into a debtor prison. All the prisons are debtor prisons, and most people are not there for a crime that they committed. A crime is only when you injure someone, either financially or physically. But most of the prisoners are there because of some other suspected crime that they perpetrate. The UCC is what all the courts go by, which is what all the police forces. We were under a police state at this time, and all of our police forces, from the local police to the state police and the federal police, they're all federal police. They all owe their allegiance to the courts, who owe their allegiance to the Queen of England. And so when you're looking at the money, that's the controlling agent of all these other agencies. And that puts us into debt. We think that our taxes go to pay our debt or to go to pay for the government, at least.
Right.
And there's not one single penny of taxes or anything else that pays for anything of government. And the government even is their government. They established the government that we have now. Our government went bankrupt in 1868. And on February 21st, 1871, they reorganized under the United States. And their number one ploy is stealth. And so they hide under names that make things look like it is us or our name. So they stole the name United States, reorganized in Washington, D.C., and that's the government is strictly Washington, D.C., and they have no authority outside of Washington, D.C., except when we sign a contract with them, like our driver's license or our Social Security card, we're signing a contract with them, and we become their agents or their employee when we do that, and that's what gives them control over us. Abraham Lincoln was responsible for bringing about the slavery of this nation. Did Abraham Lincoln free any slaves?
He never had a slave.
So he didn't free any slaves, and he didn't free the slaves of the South, did he?
No, only the North.
So he, after he was murdered by them. I mean, he was their puppet, and they needed a martyr, so they had him murdered.
He was murdered by the Jesuits.
Yes, the Jesuits murdered Abraham Lincoln, and that was to make a martyr out of him. And then in 1868, they rewrote the 13th Amendment so that they could pass the 14th Amendment, which really wasn't passed. It never was ratified. And the 14th Amendment, supposedly to free the blacks, in fact, enslaved the whites, because that's where citizenship began. And this nation was a nation of sovereigns, which meant we had rights. When you become a citizen, you give up all your rights, and that's by the contracts that you sign with them. You give up all of your rights to become a citizen, and they take your rights and give you back privileges. So as a sovereign, you have rights. As a citizen, you have privileges, which are given by them, the controllers. So we became, these were all just steps. It didn't happen overnight. And that's the Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the one that brought all these steps together during his administration. He was the planned communist president to bring all these things about.
And his protege was Woodrow Wilson, who had authorized the Federal Reserve System. And Woodrow Wilson made an armistice pact with the Germans so that they were able to allow Germany to surrender. And Germany surrendered with the entire army intact. And it was this army which later gave rise to the Adolf Hitler and the Holocaust. Now, the Holocaust itself was financed by Max Warburg and Oppenheimer, the two richest bankers in Germany. And this led directly to the Holocaust and to the rise of Hitler.
Who was behind the eugenics that Hitler was perpetrating?
Yeah, I've seen a video now. I can't remember what it was called, but it was on the eugenics program, going into how it was all started here in the U.S. and basically exported to Germany.
And who was responsible for the eugenics here in the U.S., Eustace?
Well, Avril Harriman and his wife, Margaret, and
J.D. Rockefeller.
Yes, and J.D. Rockefeller.
So it was Rockefeller and Harriman was behind the eugenics.
Yes.
And since they couldn't get anything going here in America, they found a prominent appointed dictator of Germany, new dictator of Germany, who was set up for this very purpose.
Yes. He was assisted in every way by the Democrats to bring about World War II.
And the Rockefellers and Harriman, the Harrimans were doing the eugenics program in the 19-teens and the 1920s.
And that's why the Harrimans and the eugenics people backed the armistice, because they had led to the Germans to surrender their army intact, and they were ready to start World War II.
And then they could regroup and start World War II.
So that suited Franklin D. Roosevelt fine, because that put us right into World War II.
So then you always get back to Ezra Pound recognizing those things and preaching on Radio Rome.
Yes, and now that I have Alger Hiss to indict Ezra Pound for treason against the United States.
It really wasn't treason against the United States. It was this false United States corporation that they'd set up in the 1870s, I guess, that you just mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
That he was against. So there was no form of treason. It was just this...
There was no act of treason at all.
This empty corporate body that's acting as a fake human being is the one that got offended.
Yes. He set it all up and made the World War II possible.
He was actually not treasonous traitor, but was a political prisoner. He was an enemy of FDR, not of America. And so he was arrested as a political prisoner.
And he was Roosevelt did what Stalin used it as with his political opponents. He put him in an insane asylum, and from then on, he was inmate from the St. Louis Hospital in Washington, D.C., the Federal Insane Hospital, and he remained 13 years until I got him released in 1958.
Now, actually, FDR was dead by the time they captured Ezra Pound and incarcerated him, but he's the one that set everything up for that to happen.
He did, yes.
And even the ploy of putting someone into an insane asylum, did they have anything on Ezra Pound that they could try him on?
They had not. They had no evidence of any kind. The Department of Justice was finally forced to drop the charges against him because they looked at the FBI had spent millions of dollars to build a case against him, but there was no overt act. And the FBI publicly proclaimed that Ezra Pound was the principal advisor to Benito Mussolini in Italy. And in fact, Ezra Pound only saw him once in his life.
And then you have, in actuality, the real situation is that these same bankers are bankrolling Hitler and bankrolling Mussolini and pulling the money out of the United States to create and fund this entire thing, including, I would assume, the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yes, it was a single-handed operation. And they murdered Tsar Nicholas and his family and put Stalin in charge of Russia as the actual dictator.
Well, Lenin first, or are you talking about later?
Well, Stalin murdered Lenin first with poison, and then Stalin became the ruler of Russia, and Lenin was put on exhibit as a dummy.
And it was Stalin it was Stalin's ploy to incarcerate his political enemies, not traitors of Russia, but enemies of Stalin himself.
Oh, yeah.
So he built 1,500 concentration camps up through Siberia, one every mile for 1,500 miles, and incarcerated his political prisoners in that without trying them. And that's where FDR got his idea of having insane asylums here and incarcerating people in the insane asylums without having to try them.
And then Ezra Pound never received a trial. The Constitution says you have a right to a speedy trial, but he held Ezra Pound for 13 years with no trial.
And they did it by putting him in an insane asylum that just requires so many signatures to do it. How did they get him incarcerated in St. Elizabeth?
Well, the federal government assigned 8 psychiatrists to pronounce Ezra Pound hopelessly insane. And to the end of his life, when he was finally released, he had never had a trial and never convicted of anything.
And so while he was there, was it planned to, there was a new technique to help insane people. What was that technique?
Lobotomy.
A lobotomy.
They put a long needle into the front of their brain, and which often caused death, and it caused a permanent impairment of your memory.
Was Ezra Pound under that threat?
Yes. They brought this Dr. Cameron into St. Louis Hospital to lobotomize Ezra Pound. But his wife was present, and she refused to let them do it.
Was she with him every day?
Yes. She and I were with him every day.
So when you went to visit him for the first time, he liked you. You were a young 26-year-old man that he recognized as an intellect and someone that could do his be his eyes and ears and legs to.
And I started to work right away on the Federal Reserve's conspiracy. And when I went to the Library of Congress, there was no book on the Federal Reserve. And I had the only book in the world on this subject.
So you taught yourself to be a speed reader?
Yes.
And you read 30 to 50 volumes of books every day?
Yes. I went through 5,000 books to get the my material on the Federal Reserve conspiracy.
So it was all there, it just wasn't written in a single book?
No, it was in the entire financial floor, and there's an enormous mass of material.
At the beginning, it was a requirement that different pages or people that work for the Library of Congress to bring you books. Is that correct?
The pages were told to carry them down from the floors to where I was in the reading room.
But you were beginning to order more and more books.
I was going through the books at such a great rate that the attendants complained, and so they gave me a permanent second reader division card, which allowed me to go anywhere in the Library of Congress at any time.
even to the antique section.
The rare book room.
The rare book room.
Yes.
And so you spent a great deal of time there. Did you get a job at the Library of Congress?
I was hired by the staff, and I also, the ADL, because of that, had been fired from the Library of Congress.
Were you the only man in America that was ever fired from the Library of Congress?
Yeah, politics were not readily apparent at the Library of Congress.
There was another man fired. His name was?
Walt Whitman, the poet.
So the famous poet Walt Whitman and the famous historian Ezra Eustace Mullins were the only two men ever fired.
Yes.
And you were the only one fired for political reasons.
Yeah, and I was absolutely penniless at that time. And so I moved into the library and lived there for a year.
So you lived in the Library of Congress?
After they fired you?
After they fired me, I just moved into the auditorium. And had an apartment there.
They have some day apartments down below, right?
Yes.
So you would just disappear. When they would lock the doors at 9 o'clock at night, you would just disappear down into the apartment.
And the so-called security staff never checked the library to see if anybody was still in there.
So for one solid year, you lived in the apartments in the Library of Congress.
Oh, yes. I had breakfast every day with the House pages of the Congress itself.
So you knew all the pages of Congress?
Oh, yes.
And that enabled you to know a lot of the things that were going on in Congress that were behind closed doors.
Well, they accepted me as a familiar face, and so when I was there every day, nobody thought anything about it.
And how long did you spend in the Library of Congress?
Almost exactly a year.
But for 3 years, you were in the Library of Congress. You lived there for 1 year.
Yeah, 1 year.
And you read over 5,000 books in those 3 years.
My subsequent book on the history of the Federal Reserve System was plagiarized by 82 people. My subsequent book on the history of the Federal Reserve System was plagiarized by 82 people throughout the United States.
When did you write the first edition?
1952.
And it was known as?
A Study of the Federal Reserve.
A Study of the Federal Reserve. And then it came back as The Conspiracy of the Mullins on the Federal Reserve.
Mullins on the Federal Reserve.
And then The Conspiracy of the Federal Reserve. And finally, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, which printed many tens of thousands of copies of each one of those titles.
And it later appeared as under the title The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is
a total plagiarization.
Plagiarized by the John Birch Society, and they printed 2 million of their own copies and sold it for $40 a piece. And it later appeared as the, under the title The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is
a total plagiarization.
Plagiarized by the John Birch Society, and they printed 2 million of their own copies and sold it for $40 a piece.
The Creature from Jekyll Island is a plagiarization?
A total plagiarization. They printed every word of my book faithfully. They put every comma in.
You're talking about the one from G. Edward Griffin.
Yes, the Griffin book.
So
he never set foot in the Library of Congress.
But you're saying that his whole book is plagiarized from your work?
Oh yes. And I can go to court. I went to I contacted the Library of Congress, and they said they had no enforcement provision, and they could not do anything to help me.
Wow. Well, that is quite a bomb right there. Would you, please discuss this, all you want.
Yes. And the Rockefellers who financed the John Birch Society were the victors in every way. Yes. And the Rockefellers who financed the John Birch Society were the victors in every way.
Wow. Okay. I'm just. I have a copy of that book, The Creatures from Jekyll Island. So you're saying,
how does it compare with the secrets of the Federal Reserve?
Well, they distorted a lot of my information, and they presented the book as an endorsement of the Rothschilds and the gold standard.
That's right, and
my whole approach.
And that's exactly what they're doing. And even J. Edward Griffin has been on Rush Limbaugh recently promoting his book and promoting the gold standard. And when I saw him on Rush Limbaugh, that's when the light started going off, because I've met J. Edward Griffin once and I've had him on my show before. And then when I came across the work of Stephen Zarlinga from the American Monetary Institute and his book, The Lost Science of Money, who I had on the show recently, and he cites you extensively, Eustace, when I was interviewing him, it dawned on me that there was something going on there with the Creature from Jekyll Island, and now you're here, and I had no idea about this until you two just brought it up. But
well, my book had already been in print for 50 years, and I had millions of readers. So Griffin scored a coup d'etat by taking my book and presenting it his own. And he has already built an empire about this plagiarization.
Well, you know,
people would ask why for that, and why would they be behind or sponsor all these patriots who are claiming we need to audit the Federal Reserve and we need to bring the Federal Reserve down and whatnot? What most people don't realize is that, and they've done this. All you have to know to understand what they're doing is go back in history, because they play the same thing out over and over and over again. They will bankrupt their own organization and then reorganize under a different name, and it's the same people that are pulling all the strings. So they are planning to bring the Federal Reserve down and make it crash. They themselves, they, capital T-H-E-Y.
Right.
Are planning to crash their own Federal Reserve. They will blame it on us who are crying, let's crash the Federal Reserve. And when it happens, it will make our economy 10 times worse than the the crashes, the worldwide depression of the 30s, and it will change everything, change all the economy again to their hand. They come back as the heroes.
Right.
That's their thesis and antithesis. They come back with the synthesis.
Problem, reaction, solution. It's the Hegelian
right.
dialectic.
That's their, so here they create the problem, which is the Federal Reserve. Then they show everybody that the Federal Reserve is the problem, so they crash it. Then they come back with their solution, which is the same day and under same ownership but a different vehicle. And in the meantime, they've crashed our economy, and they have somebody to blame it on. It's just like the Twin Towers. We blame the bringing down of the Twin Towers on jet planes that hit it. And that was their the day that that happened on 9/11, you saw over and over and over again the same scenario. The planes hit the buildings come down. The planes hit the buildings come down. Then you have these people that the news media interviewed. Yes, I saw the planes hit the building, and then the buildings came down.
Right.
And that was the story all day long. So then we are brainwashed to think that's exactly what happened. Well, now
right.
we're brainwashed to think that the Federal Reserve is the evil culprit that it is. We recognize that. That's true. But then they stir us up to bring down the Federal Reserve, which is going to be, it's just like William Taft in 1996 was their puppet for president. And he didn't play ball with them, just like, William McKinley. William McKinley was their candidate in 1896 for president. But he didn't play ball with them, so they had to get rid of him. They told him in 1900, if you don't take Teddy Roosevelt as your running mate, then you will not be reelected. Well, he knew they had the power to do that, so he took Teddy Roosevelt as his running mate. That signed his death warrant. And it's the same thing with the Federal Reserve. We want to destroy the Federal Reserve, but when we do that, it's so ingrained in our economy that when we kill it, we kill our economy, and we sign our own death warrant. When the Federal Reserve goes down, they're still goes bankrupt. There are nations, Germany and China and Japan in particular, but those along with Britain own our nation, which is whenever you have a bankruptcy, everything that is in the bankruptcy, everything that's owned by the bankrupt agent goes to somebody. It goes to shareholders. And who are the shareholders? It's the people who own, possess FRNs, Federal Reserve notes.
Right.
And they are in the possession of the Chinese, the Japanese, the Germans, and the British. So they own our nation.
And then they...
Our nation and the labor of our own labor was the particles of the last bankruptcy, which was FDR 1933. And we became the surety for the bankruptcy. And our gold became the surety for the bankruptcy, which is why we had to go off of the gold standard in 1934. And owning gold became a crime. If you own gold, then you could be fined $10,000 and incarcerated in prison in their debtor prison for 10 years, up to 10 years. So people turned in all their gold. So the gold went to England to pay off the bankruptcy. And now they are wanting to bring back, it's they who want to bring back the gold standard because it's through gold and silver that they manipulate everything. Well, they crashed the gold standard in 34, January of 34, through their agent, their communist agent, FDR. and were able to go strictly on paper. Well, now we're not even going by paper. We're just going by zeros in the computers.
Right.
$772 trillion are owed to China and Japan. And as they dump the Federal Reserve System, they're going to want to collect that money. And also, we abandon the use of the Federal Reserve as the world's reserve currency, and the all prices will multiply by four times the price of gasoline and everything else, and we will go into a permanent depression.
Or maybe 10 times.
Oh, yeah, 10 times.
So let me ask you a couple of things. One, when do you expect them to completely shut down the Federal Reserve? And two, who the hell is Ron Paul working for?
Well, Ron Paul will work for anybody who hires him. He is using my book to keep the Rothschilds in power.
He's using your book?
Yeah, my book.
Ed Griffin's.
Yeah.
Ron Paul had every ability to use the secrets of the Federal Reserve and sponsor it. But instead, he chose the plagiarization of the John Birch Society and
kept the Rockefellers in power.
So, what's keeping you alive, and what's going to keep me alive after I release this interview?
Well, I'm still alive despite many attempts to get me out of the way.
But they think they've gotten rid of him. And as far as they know, they sold his house. They destroyed his what little wealth that he had. He sold millions of books, but currently he has nothing to show for it because they took it all. They got rid of his house and put him in a nursing home. What are the nursing homes, Eustace?
They're mental institutions.
So where you lose all control of everything.
Absolutely.
They had him on seven different destructive drugs, one of which is Seroquel, which is a chemical lobotomy. Many in the industry understand that as a chemical lobotomy. It destroys part of your brain that the controlling part of your brain, so that they can control you. That's why they can give it to you in hospitals and nursing homes for uncontrollable patients. And they do the lobotomy for uncontrollable patients, the ice pick in the eye lobotomy in insane asylums, or they used to anyway.
But as a man that escaped the lobotomy, his wife absolutely forbade it, and so I was able to later to have him released by a congressman, and so he went back to Italy.
And they thought they would do away with Eustace Mullins with the chemical lobotomy, but thus far...
But they ordered Pam to have no further contact with me, and I never heard from him again. I had him released from the insane asylum, but I had no further contact with him.
So even after you had him released, he still didn't contact you?
I never heard from him again.
Well, he did for the first week, but then they sent him back to Italy. And Eustace has pined over that problem all this time, except that their ploy is to, just like Hitler, when they got Hitler out of jail, they said, if you don't play ball with us, then you're going to go right back. And Ezra Pound had spent 13 years in the insane asylum and gone through many more worse things, even when they incarcerated him in Italy. They had him in an open cage out by the road for several months, and he had out in the weather and the dust of the along a military road, a dirt military road, and he suffered a nervous breakdown and all kinds of things before he came here to incarcerate. So when Eustace was responsible for getting him released, they warned him off, and I'm just surmising this because of what I know that they do. They warned Ezra Pound, do not have anything to do with Eustace Mullins and do not speak out anymore, and he didn't, under threat of going back to, even though they couldn't do it, they did it once when they couldn't do it, so...
So, you know, what I'm seeing here is listening to your story and then also having Steven Zerlinga on my show a couple weeks ago. Between the two of you, it seems like, you know, if what you're saying is correct and what Zerlinga is saying is correct, which certainly matches up to what you two are saying, is that pretty much everything else out there is disinformation. Most of our political leaders, except for possibly Cynthia McKinney, who they got rid of recently, and who they also arrested off the coast of Israel or Palestine recently because she was trying to smuggle food into Palestine, and possibly Denis Kucinich, the rest of the U.S. government is entirely corrupt and entirely in the hands of this this corporate facade banking system.
Absolutely, and many of the leaders of the Patriot movements, if not most of the leaders of the Patriot movements, there are some legitimate ones, but even they're suppressed. They can only do so much. The true patriots. But most of the patriot movements are, many of them have tried to capture Eustace Mullins and use him to spearhead their organization. And it's all under the ploy of being legitimately patriotic.
Now, I'm just, what about this, okay, do the two of you consider Denis Kucinich to be, you know, because he seems to be the only one that's actually doing something against the Federal Reserve, and he's working with Zerlinga with the American Monetary Act and not going towards a gold standard and trying to go to a nationalized fiat system out of the hands of the private bankers and things like that. Does that seem to be on the straight and narrow for you guys?
Well, it certainly is.
Do you know that man?
No, I haven't met him, but I know of him.
So, wow. Okay. Well,
it really doesn't make any difference. Even those that are true patriots out there trying to solve our problems, they've got they control everything. Everything.
Right, right. I get that, and I really got the picture from Zerlinga's book, which is why I recommend, on top of Eustace's books, everybody must read Stephen Zerlinga's Lost Science of Money. And those people out there, those of you out there who think that the gold and silver standard is the way to go, you know, listen up to what we're saying on this show, because Eustace and Stephen, in their work, they get down to the core issues, and the gold and silver standard is a front by the bankers to keep us enslaved. And when you study the history of gold and silver used as money, there's not ever been a single society ever that within a few decades hadn't fallen under slavery or serfdom.
Absolutely. And nothing is as it seems. Nothing.
And the Congress of the United States is totally in the pocket of the ADL and the Israeli government. And because of that, they're willing to dump the Federal Reserve System because they don't need it anymore. Now, Bernanke announced yesterday that the recession is over because everything is under control.
And this concludes Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast number 45, part one of my interview with Eustace Mullins. Here's the rest of my interview with Eustace Mullins. Thanks for listening.
Obviously, they put you in the home, but from 1952, I think, was when you first published your book on the Federal Reserve until today. How did you not end up in jail yourself all this time?
Oh, I've been threatened by the IRS constantly because the Federal Reserve Bank closed down the Treasury of the United States And I tell people to ask their Congress, who stole the Treasury of the United States? Because it's under the name of the Federal Reserve Bank now.
The people might be interested in that, Eustace. Is there a Treasury of the United States?
Yes, there's a Treasury. It's an empty building on 14th Street in Washington, D.C.
An empty building?
Yes.
And so it's there just in name only.
So that's where the American people's money and monetary control should be headquartered, and now it's just an empty front that the bankers parade around at our expense. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes.
And when was it closed?
And the people of this country have no idea that the Treasury has been closed in 1913 by the Federal Reserve Act of 1913.
So the actual act is what perpetrated the closing of the Federal Reserve, of the Treasury.
And every American gets a bill from the Federal Reserve Bank for their income tax. And they don't realize that it says mailed by the Department of the Treasury, and that is fraud because there is no IRS in the Department of the Treasury.
There is no Treasury, and the IRS is just a collection agency for the Federal Reserve.
It's a private collection agency for a private bank, and there's absolutely no authority.
And every penny of every tax and every registration, every car title, everything goes into the pockets of the Federal Reserve.
And they passed a law that all tax collection must be deposited in the Federal Reserve Bank within 24 hours.
So what pays for all of our taxes and everything go to the debt to the Federal Reserve.
Oh, yes.
Right.
None goes to any of the rest of it, so it all goes into the pockets. All of our taxes and everything go into the pockets of those who own the Federal Reserve.
The stockholders.
And the price of government, which is their government, the price of government is borrowed every year. That's what the president signs the budget every year.
And the American people had no idea of this. It has never been mentioned.
If the president borrows $1 trillion for the debt, $1 trillion is printed, and none of the taxes go to the budget.
And the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 states in plain language the Department of the Treasury is no longer the fiscal agent, the sole fiscal agent of the American people.
All right, so when is this whole system supposed to collapse? When, in your opinion, do they have it scheduled to collapse?
They can collapse at any time. But the printing presses and the Holocaust Museum, coincidentally, the Federal Reserve notes are printed in the Holocaust Museum on 14th Street in Washington, D.C. So the tourists come there and watch there's supposed money being printed in the Bureau of Printing and Engraving at $2 a bill, and they're under contract with the Federal Reserve Bank to print the money.
For $2 a bill? So for every one?
I think it's up to $3 or $4 a bill at this present time.
So for every dollar they print, they put on a $2 or $3 usury on top of it?
Oh, yes. And the United States government pays the Federal Reserve Bank $100 for a $100 bill. There's no discount.
The real usury is not interest. The real usury is inflation, so that they've inflated our money from the beginning.
Well,
today,
of course.
99% inflation.
Because there's never enough money in society to pay the debt, and there's no money in society without the debt.
They only print the money to use. They never print the money to pay the debt off. So all of the debt is never paid off. All of our taxes and everything only go to pay
the interest.
The interest. Well, now we can't even pay the interest. So they have they have to collapse it and start all over again.
You know, after I read Zarlenga's book, I realized what Kucinich was involved in, and I could also see what Ron Paul was involved in. But you know, when you break all of this stuff down and explain it this way, and Ustis being an expert on this material, it's painting a picture that I knew was there and was beginning to come into focus. And I've been studying about the New World Order for the last 20 years. And, you know, my family and friends always called me the wacky conspiracy theorist.
Of course.
And
they created that term theory, or they added that word theory. Eustace is the one that opened the doors, the floodgates, to understand the conspiracy itself.
Right. I see that.
They had to counteract his conspiracy, blowing the whistle on the conspiracy with that term, that word that they added to conspiracy, to poo-poo his whole works.
So Ustis is sort of the peak of the conspiracy mountain unraveling or unfolding, so to speak.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
Right.
Yes, it is.
So have you read The Curse of Canaan?
I have not.
That's the book that, see, all of his books are pieces of the puzzle, and The Curse of Canaan is the picture on the box that helps us put all the other pieces together, and it shows the world order, the whole Masonic world order, not just Masonic, because it's religious as well. There's two legs to this deal, and one is church and one is state.
Right.
And it goes all the way. Constantine is the one that separated church and state, which is still separated this day, but they still point everything to the government. Government is not state, and government is not church. They're both legs of the government.
And right, yeah.
So,
didn't Emperor Constantine, well, he's really in the one in the Council of Nicaea that we show in my first book that I wrote with Andrew Utaji, we show that he created Christianity at the Council of Nicaea based on basically ancient pagan sun worship, fertility,
right,
drug
absolutely.
Use, and usury a religion. And that's, you know, basically three or four themes there. And
actually what he did, he had a very loosely federated, and that term federated is throughout history. Federated and central and united are synonymous terms. And he had a very loosely federated or very loosely centralized or very loosely united kingdom. And the way that he united it was to marry the paganism of his father, which was, his father was a Greek king, and his mother was a British aristocracy. And so he was a product of a Greek marriage. He actually married the Greek paganism of his father to the Christian religion of his mother, and came up with religion Christian beliefs of his mother, and that's what created religion. He created religion himself, and the Christian religion, so that and Karl Marx said it best, I think, in his in 1856 or somewhere about that, when he wrote that religion is the opiate of the people.
Right.
That's to keep the people dumbed down and pointed to the government. So
right.
All of this is ancient.
Right.
And the important thing that people do not know is that in 1914, the original Federal Reserve stock was purchased in toto by Rockefeller and his fellow conspirators, so that that's why they murdered the Romanov family, the richest man in the world. He had $200 million in the National City Bank of New York, a Rockefeller bank, and the conspirators bought all the stock of the Federal Reserve System with Romanov's money, so they're the actual owners of the Federal Reserve System.
So,
and this was it. This was in gold that he had $200 million.
Yes.
And I've heard that his descendants have been trying to get the money, and they've get their money back, and they've been blocked every step of the way.
Well, that's why they murdered him, because if they were dead, they couldn't bring a lawsuit. And no lawsuit has ever been brought.
And they thought they had them all killed. But two of them escaped, survived.
Yeah, I knew two of them really well.
He knew two of the children real well.
Yeah.
Alexei and Anastasia.
And, of course, how do they, you know, what do? They twist the whole thing into a Walt Disney cartoon, Anastasia. And,
yes.
You know, to show these people that they ruined and destroyed, and this whole thing that they funded from beginning to end, and then they make a cute little mouse and child Disney story out of it, and turn
that's
it
their in smoke and mirrors.
Turn it into
Anastasia was married to a CIA agent, Monahan, and so they live happily ever after.
You know, I got to tell you,
everything is smoke and mirrors.
Oh yeah, you know, and this is something that I've realized is that you know, from the time I was about 23, is that everything I knew was a lie. Everything I had been
yes.
told was a lie. And
absolutely,
that's the starting point. You have to start from there and go on.
Yeah, well, you know, basically what had happened is when I was 23, I had, to put it in simple terms, I had what was nothing short of a full-blown out-of-body experience. And in a couple of hours, I learned more about this stuff and later on went to check it out. And the more I looked, the more I realized that what I saw in the visions from this out-of-body experience were correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it might seem a little bit loony at first, but when you listen to the rest of my show and listen to guys I've had on the show like Dr. Stanislav Grof, who's the world's leading expert in LSD and psychedelic drugs, it makes a lot more sense.
When you called me yesterday, I was actually watching the Gnostic dot the what's
the Gnostic Media?
Yeah, the Gnostic Media. I was watching that when you called me yesterday.
The Pharmacratic Inquisition video?
Yes. Yeah, I was watching that one.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's my work. That's you know, that's about 20% of what's in my first book, Astrotheology and Shamanism.
Have you heard of Pete Peters, who has a Christian radio program?
No, I have not.
He sponsored a DVD. He did a DVD about, the name of it is DC Street Sorceries. And it's, I mean, there are other works out there also, but this DC Street Sorceries is the best one I've seen on showing how Washington, D.C., by the Freemason George Washington and many of the other Masons at the time, he was responsible for laying out everything in D.C., and it's everything is the sex symbols and the
right.
Washington Monument. And the Washington
right.
Monument, most people don't realize, is 555 feet high with a base of 111 feet, which is where you come up with the 666.
Ah.
And also the six-pointed star with the six bars across it and the six spaces in it is also 666. And both of these are the symbol of Nimrod's government.
And it's also a symbol of fertility worship. The upward triangle is male.
Absolutely.
And the downward is female.
Right. The obelisk, the phallic symbol,
correct,
is pointed at the Oval Office.
Correct.
We've
talked about
the whole layout is that, but that all dates back to Nimrod, who started all of this, and it was his phallic symbol that everybody worshipped, And it was he that created government to start with. And so we're under his government at this present time. What the Bible called Mystery Babylon the Great, that's us. That's what we're under. So
I wanted to ask you if you would go more into the War of 1812.
Oh, wow. The War of 1812 was declared by England against the United States because Madison had failed to renew the Bank of the United States Charter, which was up in
1811.
And that was the only reason for Britain's War of 1812. And that's the way things are done in Washington.
What most people don't realize also is that July 4th, 1776, was not our birthday. It wasn't even the birthday of the government. September 5th, 1774, was actually our birth date, and that's when Peyton Randolph became the first president of Congress. George Washington was the eighth president of Congress.
And Peyton Randolph was the leading Freemason in the state of Virginia.
Now, the July 4th thing was a Masonic date. Is that correct?
Yes.
and I found it very interesting. I used to live in Serbia, in Yugoslavia, before the financiers destroyed it. Yugoslavia's Independence Day was also July 4th.
Oh.
I didn't know that, but that's interesting.
And that's where the World Wars started, when Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated.
Right, for attempting to enslave the Serbs. So I forget his name, but one of the Serbian guys assassinated him because of all of this crud, I suppose.
Oh, yes, that was Gavrilo Princip who assassinated him. And he's a hero in Serbia today.
Yeah, well, and rightly so, you know, and they always like to twist the story to blame the Serbs for the start of World War One. But if they weren't being enslaved by these sons of bitches, then there never would have been the issue, you know. So it's again, they're just flipping the facts, the opposite of the truth. And one thing that I learned when I was living in Yugoslavia was that. You know, and I've written an article on one of my websites about all of this, is that no matter what they said in the U.S. media, and I was getting CNN and Sky News and BBC and things like that when I was in Serbia on satellite, but I very soon figured out that if I wanted to figure out what was going on, first all I had to do was exactly flip the story of what I was being told and then begin to analyze the news from there.
That's how I began to learn things as well, Jan. Just look on the opposite side of the coin from what they're saying. Once you realize that everything they say is propaganda and their story, you look on the other side of it and you can see that you can find the truth. You still have to dig it out, but you can find the truth.
You know, and what they leave... They leave about 5% leeway for manipulation, and you know what they'll do is they'll include 5% truth and 95% BS, and then when
focus on that 5% truth,
right? Well, they leave enough just to tell you a little bit, but then they spin the rest of the story behind it,
right? And when you Eustace wrote an article, the name of it was "The Reign of Terror," and subtitled. The French Revolution of 1789, the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, the Spanish Civil War of 1936, and soon set for the United States. Now, he could have included The Dark Side of the Moon. Have you read that, The Dark Side of the Moon, The Demise of Poland?
No, I have not.
And what Stalin did to Poland between 1939 and 41.
Please enlighten me.
And what he did to the Ukraine. I mean, he was responsible for murdering, and that was the reason for his concentration camps up in Siberia, was to take all these. He destroyed the whole white Russian farmers by the red communist Bolsheviks, and he did the same thing to white Poland and got rid of all of them. He did the same thing to white Germany, which is why he required FDR and Churchill, FDR in particular, because our army, Patton, who was a true, General Patton, who was a true patriot, even though he was responsible for murdering many German men, he did it in ignorance. And then after he did, he realized that he had been fighting the wrong army, which is what he stated in his some of his letters to his wife. And he wanted to go up and destroy Russia. He said, if we don't do it now, while they're weakened, and here Eisenhower, who is a player of the Rothschilds, ties his hands and doesn't even let him go into Italy and Germany and do what he needed to do best, and that was to, they didn't want the war to end. They wanted the war to be prolonged until Russia, under Stalin, could get down there and take their rightful place as the conquerors and divide the spoil between FDR and Stalin.
The Hitler-Stalin Pact was a conspiracy against the Catholic Church because the victims were all Catholics.
Yes, and the Poland were all Catholics, and the Dark Side of the Moon describes that whole thing explicitly.
So is that what Pink Floyd was singing about in the? Is that what they were talking about with the Dark Side of the Moon album that they did?
I do believe so.
Oh yes, that was the foreword to the book was written by T.S. Eliot, a disciple of Ezra Pound.
But many of the songwriters and including John Lennon, that's the reason they had to murder him. Many of the songwriters and are poets in their own right. They're poets, and all the poets. Ezra Pound was a poet, but he was a historical storyteller, and that's what poetry is. That's what Shakespeare was all about, was telling the true story and dramatizing it, telling the story in allegory. So you can find the stories in truth, but written in allegory through songs and poetry.
So, you know, what else is there? You guys have completely blown my mind today. And, you know, I've listened to many of...
Not much too great a shock.
Oh, no. You know, and I've listened to a lot of your interviews, and I've seen a lot of your videos and things online. But you're covering a lot of... Actually covering some material here that I hadn't heard you talk about before. So I'm just wondering what else you've
That's
got.
That's why I wanted to be part of the interview, Jan. I didn't mean to throw in a monkey wrench in anything.
Oh, no, that's fine.
I've lived with Eustace for this past year, and he's told me all these things as reason that I bring them out to him. So because I know the things that America has not heard, things that
right.
he knows that no one else knows.
All right, Jesse, so this is going to be directed at you. You know, what is the most mind-blowing thing you've ever heard from Eustace? I want you to cull that out of him for me.
Well, I don't know if there's one single thing. It's just the whole story that everything, nothing is as it seems. Everything is propaganda and smoke and mirrors. That's the name of their game. They stir up, it's thesis and antithesis, coming up with synthesis. And so there's many other pieces of this puzzle that are surprising. It's just like Joe Kennedy finally got a son to fulfill a whole four-year administration. Who was that? Who was Joe Kennedy's son that fulfilled a presidential...
Wait, you're talking about John F. Kennedy?
No, I'm talking about Jimmy Carter.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Lillian Nathan.
So Jimmy Carter is related to the Kennedys?
He's his Joe's son.
I guess I had no idea about that.
Well, nobody does, or very few people do. But
Well, who elected this goofball as president? And he's immediately named.
Oh, you're talking about
Bilderberger Society.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about Bush and H.W. Bush and then Prescott Bush and the whole Skull and Bones clan.
And
there.
Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, we think that we've got two parties, Democrat and Republican. We've got one party with two branches.
Right, exactly.
As a matter of fact, we have one party, which is the Communist Party, and all the other branches are under that, including the Fascist Party and the Nazi Party. They're all part of the thesis and antithesis.
Where does the Libertarian Party fit in?
Well, same place. The Libertarian Party is there to get the patriots under their party. It's a party of patriots, and I'm not saying that those under the Libertarian Party are evil people. It's their leaders that are there. And I'm not saying that anybody in the Christian churches are evil. They're not. They're all good people. I'm not saying that the people that are the Masons are evil people. They're not. It's the leaders on top. The Masons don't know any more about their leaders than the Christians know about their leaders.
Right.
And we've got all these pulpit people that are turning all of their congregations, making them look to that little postage stamp place in the Middle East that's ruling the world. And you can also look at every one of our presidents has had their handlers. Every president has been a puppet except for, well, there have been a few that aren't. Andrew Jackson, Harrison. Harrison only served 1 month before they assassinated him.
I think William Jennings Bryan was another one, wasn't he?
Right. William Jennings Bryan. And so there have Howard Taft, William McKinley, each one of the.
What about Taylor?
Yeah, Taylor was a true patriot. Well, there have been many good patriots there, but when they get in, if they are able to accomplish or begin to accomplish something, they just take them out in one way or the other.
Right, and since the intelligence community.
We've been surprised by the passion and the interest of young people in America today in response to my lectures.
Eustace and I are going around the country and just speaking to small groups of people. We got here to in this city in Ohio, and we can't leave here because the doors keep open for we had a meeting the last three nights. Different groups, and then we have another one tonight and another one Saturday. There's so much interest, and there's so much young people interest. Eustace is really amazed at all the interest of the young people,
right?
20 and 30-year-olds. Well, Jan, there's so many rabbit holes that we can go down, just like our food and where we are today. All of our food has been hybridized by the Monsanto,
right?
Group. They own all the. They finally see. They've been trying to get patents on seeds from way back when. And Congress, even though Congress is not our Congress, it hasn't been since Abraham Lincoln dismissed it in 1860. It's a different Congress, and it's not our Congress. But still, there are some legitimate men there in their Congress that hold things up, and Monsanto's tried to get seeds patented, and Congress refused to let them. You can't patent life. Well, then they orchestrated the Valdez spill because they had supposedly invented this microorganism that would eat oil. So they had to have a great spill because they have an agenda. And what their agenda is, they supposedly created this microorganism that can eat oil. Now they've created life.
Right. Well, what's funny is I've spoken to, and I plan to have him on my show sometime soon, is a man who actually did invent something that or discover something that eats oil. He's a mycologist or a mushroom expert up in Oregon by the name of Paul Stamets. Uh-huh. And he's actually patented and proved that he discovered a fungus that literally eats up an oil spill and turns the oil spill back into a life-producing mound within a matter of weeks or months.
But he wasn't able to do that until after Monsanto got first. They opened the doors, and they opened the doors for themselves. Not for your friend.
Yeah.
He just got in on the wake.
Well, he got lucky, basically, I think.
He followed in on the open door. And so now they're getting patents on all of their hybrid seeds, and they're taking all the heirloom seeds off the market so that you can only buy their patented seeds. And one of the reasons, there's many reasons that they had to take JFK out of the picture. Now, and they use all these different things to get us to argue about the different reasons, but all of them are valid reasons. One of the reasons that few people recognize is that in 1961 and under his administration, we had enough grain in the storehouse in Nebraska, Kansas, Colorado. You can still drive out there today and you don't go a couple of miles before you see mega storage bins, silos for grain. They're all empty today, but in John Kennedy's day, they were all full, and so much so, and the crops were so great that we had stuff stored outside on the concrete pads. And I remember that. I lived in Colorado at the time, and it's an incredible how wealthy we were in stockpiles of grain. Well, one of the first things that LBJ did was he destroyed or he got rid of all of our grain. He gave it away or sold it cheap to all the nations. And then we had all the feed the children, the religious feed the children groups that were advertising for everybody, bleeding heart liberals, to send in your money so we can buy this grain and ship it over to the poor indigent people, which it's not even a drop in the bucket. But what they did, they got rid of all of our grain. In 1961, there was enough food stored to feed every man, woman, and child in America for 3 solid years, 3 meals a day, non-rationed. Well, now there's none. And they're always experimenting with their hybrid stuff. And what they did last year was they sent all this new hybrid grain, corn, to India. Well, India had a total failed crop this year because it didn't germinate. So they say, oh, we're sorry. Well, next year we'll give you, these seeds are guaranteed, so we'll give you more seeds next year. Well, that was just an experiment, and it worked real well. If you drive through the countryside nowadays, you see two crops all over America, from Maryland to California, from coast to coast. And there's two crops, and they're hybrid crops, and they're there for a reason and a purpose. They're corn and soybean, both hybrid crops. Now, the corn issue, China's the one that started the soybean craze, and then through Monsanto did through China, and then Monsanto did through the corn. In the 60s, again, when I was a teenager growing up, there were sugar beet factories all over Colorado, and sugar was king. That was that was Holly Sugar.
Right.
And then you had I also lived in Sugarland, or down by Sugarland, Texas, where sugar cane was king. And these two outfits, sugar cane sugar and sugar beet sugar, provided all the sugar for America and a lot of the world. And they began to close all the sugar beet factories up in Colorado. And it really affected the economy of Colorado. But the point was, they were fixing to, they had come up with this hybrid corn that produced a great deal of high fructose corn syrup. And they needed to get it on the market. So they drove up the price of sugar sky high, so that by 1974 and 75, there was sugar was so great, and there was such a shortage, and it was so great that back up to 72, they had finally come up with this high. They'd been working on it all the time, and they knew they were going to.
So then they basically wiped out all the sugar, replaced it with this corn syrup that's horrible for your health, by the way.
Right, which is people recognize it, but they didn't, or they knew it, but they didn't recognize what the problem was.
Right.
How many people, all of America was complaining in the 80s that they have changed the taste of Coca-Cola.
Right, exactly.
Well, the reason for the change in taste was that they did away with
the sugar.
They replaced it with high fructose corn syrup.
Well, you know, in foreign countries, Coca-Cola, you know, in much of Central Europe, and when I've been in South America, Coca-Cola
and in Mexico,
they still use sugar, and and it tastes much better.
So you can go to Mexico, or you can get the Mexican Coca-Cola product, and it's exactly like it was here in the 50s.
Right, and it tastes significantly better.
And the high fructose corn syrup is single-handedly responsible for our sugar diabetes pandemic
and the extreme obesity in America. I mean,
and the extreme obesity,
you know,
our young girls.
Right, and you know, I've been overseas a number of times, and it's just every time I return to the United States, it's just mind-boggling how overweight Americans are.
If you yesterday or day before, maybe it was Sunday, they had a deal on the History Channel, which I only watch that because I know the true history, and I pick out the bits and pieces of truth that they present there.
Right.
It's just as propagandized as everything else. All history.
For sure. For sure. So, you know, the History Channel is some of the worst, but occasionally, and I've seen a couple of shows that they've done that they've actually provided the truth on. Yeah, you know, it's like Showtime in this film, American Drug War, the Last Great White Hope. That's actually a friend of mine did that video, Kevin Booth. And, you know, so occasionally they'll let real things on and get out.
And that's just part of their smoke and mirrors. If they kept it totally quiet, but everybody's so ingrained in the conspiracy theory that even these things don't make us stir up enough to do any good. And they've got all their ducks in a row, so there's nothing we can do about it. But back to the high fructose corn story. In this History Channel deal, they showed why the name of it was the Black Storm, which showed the Dust Bowl of the early 30s. That was created by them. They created the Dust Bowl because of improper farming practices. And what they did, they coerced the farmers into plowing up their grassland of the Midwest and planting it. When they did, they destroyed the cover crop. It created its own drought and then created its own weather pattern and the severe wind storms that blew up all the dust over to Manhattan and destroyed. That's why we had all the soup lines. That's why we had starvation in America during the early 30s. And that was part of the thesis and antithesis, that FDR can come up with a solution. The New Deal was his solution to solve all the problems.
And of course they had to borrow from the same bankers to do the New Deal.
Absolutely.
Instead of doing what Lincoln did and create the money from the government to avoid the debt.
Yes. So he created the bankruptcy in 33, went off the gold standard in January of 34. But what's happening today is this corn and soybeans are planted everywhere.
Right.
And the deal in India with the experiment of the non-germinating seed, all the farmers all the way across America have been talked into raising this
GMO corn,
high yield of corn and soybeans. So then all they have to do, when all everything is done right, they've destroyed our food reserves. What they're going to do is sell the same seeds to the American farmers. We have a whole failed crop of soybean and corn, and we have a dust bowl that's 10 times worse than the 33. We have no food grains, so they're bringing starvation down on America just like they did France and Russia and Poland. And
let me ask you guys this. Why stay in the U.S.? Why not move to another country?
Done the other countries. And the U.S. is the only one that they can't control. And remember what the world order is all about.
Okay. They can't. I thought they were the ones behind controlling it through the Federal
Reserve. They are controlling us, and they have been doing this. But see, that they can't just do it overnight. So it's taken 200 and some odd years to get to this point.
Okay.
Their whole idea is to bring about the world order. I knew all this for a long time, but I didn't understand the true emphasis of it until I read a book by T.W. Hughes written in 1944, and I just read it like 5 years ago. The name of it is The 40 Years of Roosevelt. It was the Roosevelts, and especially FDR, that they were planning to bring about the world order. Teddy Roosevelt was to set it up. Woodrow Wilson was to get it done with his League of Nations. Franklin Roosevelt was responsible for destroying Germany, the only nation that would be a threat, and then they destroyed Poland and all the other farmer nations of the world, made third world nations out of them, and then Roosevelt was to create the war that would bring it all about. He did bring about the United Nations after his demise, and they murdered him also. They killed him.
Why did they kill him?
Because they needed another. They knew that he wasn't going to be able to get it done, and they needed another martyr, just like some of the others. Abraham Lincoln was a martyr. He was a real villain, but they martyred him. He was their puppet, but they killed him to make a martyr out of him. They did the same thing with FDR, and it was FDR that they had planned to get all this stuff done, but no matter how hard they've tried, they thought that the Bushes would be able to bring it about. Bill Clinton, we also know his daddy. His daddy is Winthrop Rockefeller. They're all related, and even the current president is a Rockefeller, and so was Abraham Lincoln, and so was Alexander Hamilton. Every one of the presidents has had their handler. Alexander Hamilton was the Rothschild agent that was George Washington's handler, and we know many of them through history. Colonel Edward Mendel House was the handler up till Alger Hiss. He was a Wilson's handler, and then he was in the White House until Alger Hiss took over the job. The current one is Kissinger, and actually Kissinger is ruling the world today. Kissinger is the most powerful man in the world.
Isn't he? He's not even allowed to leave the U.S., though, I thought. Isn't he wanted by Interpol for war crimes?
Yeah. But he's still pulling the shots. He's still pulling the shots of everything, and he has since he was made Nixon's handler. And see, the main thing that they did with, see, Nixon was fighting against them. He was their puppet, but he was fighting against them too, and fighting against the news media, and doing all these things behind their back, supposedly, except you can't do it behind their back. They knew everything that was going on. But the main thing that they used Nixon for was to get the trade agreements with China. They had to do that. See, they're planning to use China to bring this nation down. Once they have starved and murdered by disease one-third of our population, then they'll bring China in. They're planning to murder one-third of our population in the next few years, and that'll be by drought, famine, and diseases. And we already have the diseases in us, but while we're fat and plump by their hybridized food product, poison products,
corn syrup. And,
yes, the corn syrup and the soy. Everything has soy in it and high fructose corn syrup. Everything. And so we have all the diseases in us. Here's an example to understand this. A man smokes for 50 years, and then he quits smoking and he dies from cancer. Why is that? Because the 50 years that he's been smoking, the smoking is what causes little bitty cancers to rise up throughout his lungs. But at the same time, the nicotine keeps those cancers suppressed. As soon as he quits smoking, the very thing that caused the cancers in the first place has been removed, and the cancers grow wild.
Because there's nothing there to suppress.
Right, there's nothing there. Well, the very thing that's made us sugar diabetic and obese, and it's created cancers in our bodies, we have them there. The cancers are already there. That's why so many women, that's why cancer is rampant.
Right.
And there is a cure for cancer. You know, there's simple cures for
cancer.
Oh,
I know. Are you familiar with Rick Simpson from Canada? Are you familiar with his treatment?
No.
He's actually, and this has been proved at University of Denver, Colorado, by Robert Malamud and a few other universities around the world. But
baking soda?
No, I hadn't heard of that one. But what they're doing is they're taking pure extract from cannabis or from marijuana flowers, and and they apply it directly to the cancer, either topically for skin cancer or internally, and it just wipes out the cancer. And not only that, but it protects all of the healthy cells at the same time and promotes regeneration of new cells.
Yes, and do you know why?
Why?
Because every cancer, cancer virus is acidic. And all they're doing is raising the pH level to the point, and the marijuana does a better job because it protects the cells at the same time. But anything that you do, whether you can use baking soda is one of the quickest agents to use because it brings your pH level up. We're too acidic. That's what high fructose corn syrup does. That's what sugar does. But the high fructose corn syrup is 10 times better at creating cancer because it brings our acidic level up. The white potatoes do the same thing. So they really promote the white potatoes and the French fries.
Well, you know, I was just in Peru, and down there they have, not to mention corn, they've got hundreds of varieties of corn that are everywhere, but they've also got 4,000 different types of potatoes down there.
But those are good potatoes.
Right, exactly.
And it's good corn. And ironically, Jan, I just met a young man this week that had been down in Peru. He just got back from Peru, and he had tried to bring back some potatoes and some corn to here, and they confiscated it, and he barely got out with the skin of his teeth. And he's very fired up about Peru and the potatoes. He wanted to bring back some potatoes, and they confiscated those. They allowed him to bring back some cocoa leaves
Yeah.
Cocoa leaves.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's, and that's the thing is they make the big cocaine lie in this country and, oh, we're going to go down there and eradicate coca. But yeah, that would be like trying to eradicate McDonald's in the U.S. And I've done a show about this when I returned, because I actually ended up in the hospital down there to treat a stomach problem that my doctors here didn't treat properly for 13 years
Is that why you went down there?
One of the reasons. We had gone down to visit my wife's from Peru, and we had gone down there to visit her family. And then we decided that when we were down there, because my health was so bad, that we would see a doctor there. And so I go to a doctor there, and I ended up getting sick with the flu the same day as the doctor was doing the scopes, and I couldn't fight the flu. So I ended up in the hospital there for 5 days. And they cured me of a stomach problem that I had had for 13 years. They totally cured me of it with a week in the hospital there plus 2 weeks of outpatient treatment. And it cost about 1/30th of the cost of the same treatment in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you got cured.
And I got cured. So,
which is the...
Is Eustace still with us there?
Yes, he's still there.
I want to tell you, you got to get a young person on your program, because I told some young people yesterday that in 1900, Ezra Pound was the hero of every young person in the world. And they couldn't believe it, but it's true.
Well, Jan is a young person.
Yeah, well, I'm getting up there.
He's in his 30s.
Yeah, I'm getting up there, but I'm starting the young activist that I use.
I'm working harder than ever.
Yeah, you know, you guys are doing some phenomenal work, and actually, somebody from Australia first, somebody by the name of Santos from Australia, turned me on to your work about 6 or 8 months ago for the first time, and I was just completely blown away by it at the time. You know, so I applaud you guys, and you know, it's good to finally find after looking into all of these things. And basically, what had happened is after doing years of protests and fighting about this and that, I realized that I wasn't attacking the roots of the problem; that I was attacking the branches and the leaves.
Yeah,
and I had to reorganize.
They just grow back.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I had to reorganize. Excuse me. And rethink my strategy, and then I realized that that it was religion was one of the primary things. So that's why I've written 2 books on that. And my last book, I actually proved that Judeo-Christianity was based on psychedelic mushroom use originally. And I've actually found and printed ancient primary texts that back that up. It was along with dozens of ancient paintings and frescoes and things like that. But you know, and the New World Order was always an interest of mine, and I always knew there was something about the IMF and the World Bank and the Bilderbergers and things like this. And you hear about the Rothschilds, but I really couldn't get at it. And it was your work, along with Zarlenga's work, that really started putting the final pieces together, at least what I assume right now, and maybe next year I'll see a whole new wave of pieces come flying in at me. But from the pieces that I've been studying for the last 20 years, you, Eustace, and Stephen Zarlenga were the two that actually made it so that the pieces started falling together, the ones that I've had anyway, and giving me a clear picture. And when that happened, it was just... you know, it was quite a shock that I had overlooked your work for so long, and yet here you've been doing this for almost 60 years now.
60 years this year.
60 well, years this year.
Dale has worked very hard to keep anybody from reading my books.
They well, even were responsible for burning the only book in Germany.
Yeah, the old German edition was burned.
10,000 copies.
Wow. So, yeah, I'm going to have to get a hold of a copy of all of your books, Eustace. I'm definitely going to...
Oh, they're printed in Japanese now, and all of my titles are being reprinted.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. So I'm going to have to get my hands on a set of all of them. And I actually think I've seen them on eBay. Oh, you know what I saw yesterday was a first edition of one of your books selling on Amazon for $8,000.
Oh, my God.
It's a first edition of the original copy of your Federal Reserve book. It's autographed by you, and they're selling it on Amazon right now for $8,000 some.
Well, you know, the first edition of that book sold out in one afternoon.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that makes you the author of the most expensive book ever written by a living author, and you've dethroned the former person who is a J.P. Morgan shill, R. Gordon Wasson, who is the father of ethnomycology, and his famous book or book set, Mushrooms, Russia, and History, was the former holder of that title, and it looks like you've dethroned it by several thousand dollars.
Oh, yes. I remember that book very well. And that was when J.P. Morgan, they were all pushing the getting high on mushrooms.
Yeah, well, you know, what had happened was R. Gordon Wasson was J.P. Morgan's vice president, and they were all into studying these things. And then R. Gordon Wasson went down into Mexico in the Oaxaca region and did a ceremony with Maria Sabina. And he's the so-called discoverer of the mushrooms, at least to white Western society anyway. And then he went to his buddies at Time Life, who is Henry Luce, a Skull and Bones member and Council on Foreign Relations member, and C.D. Jackson, who is the head of U.S. psychological warfare and was involved at Buchenwald and things like that. And they created this whole wave of interest in psychedelic mushrooms via this instance. And in a way, I think it sort of backfired on Wasson, but I've always wondered, because there's an underlying theme there, that these substances can be used to wake an individual up from the control of the New World Order and the religion. And at times they can also have the opposite effect, not as often, but they can also be used to control the masses as the CIA attempted to use LSD for in the 60s. And I think, you know, for the large part, it backfired on them. But at the same time, it turns people in some ways pacifist and less active. But at the same time, I've seen many people who've done LSD and come to the next day and said, you know, I've seen the light. I understand how they do everything. I want to go be an activist now. So I think the psychedelics were one of the issues that they probably later on decided that they shouldn't have let loose. And that's why they've spent the last 40 years trying to outlaw them and prevent any studies on them and things like that.
When any of the hallucinogenics are in their natural state is one thing, but whenever you produce them chemically, it changes the it doesn't necessarily change the power and everything.
The life force or something in there, you know.
Yes, there's something that and I don't understand it, I don't even claim to understand it, but I know anytime you change things with chemical, even the growing of crops with chemical fertilizer, it changes the nature of the plant. And so it would be the same thing, which is why it becomes such a poisonous thing and has murdered many thousands of people, millions of people, which is part of their whole plan. I mean, they've created all the viruses. They create all the poisons. They created the AIDS virus to decimate the whole black African population. They created the Spanish flu, which Eustace told you about. They've created the swine flu and the craze of it, and the smoke and mirrors that they don't have enough serum. Of course, they got enough serum to do every person in the world, but they make it look like they've got a shortage and scare all these parents into getting their children inoculated first, children and pregnant women. and then they'll do the military, and then they're doing the forced inoculation of all of us employees. We're all employees of the Washington, D.C., which is when we signed our... Look on your driver's license, and you'll see a name there that's spelled in all capital letters. Well, that's not you.
Right.
That's a corporation that was created for you, and when you signed, that's the employee of Washington, D.C., a creation of theirs. Even when you were born, what does BIRTH mean?
Well, it's
they changed the lettering of it.
Docking in a harbor, I believe, or
right. It's a berth on a ship.
Right.
And the dock, the doctor is nothing but a dock master.
Well, you know,
the rabbit holes just go on. There's numerous.
Yeah.
And they just go on and on.
Well, let's. I'd like to keep an invitation open to the both of you to come back on my show again, you know, sometime maybe in the near future. But, we've got 2.5 hours of material here.
Well,
so
hope you can edit out enough to do a radio station.
Is there anything that you two would like to add to the discussion before we end it here? What in your opinion is the most important thing that people should take away from this interview, the single most important idea that people need to know and grasp?
Move out of the cities and into the countryside and
flee to the mountains.
Flee to the mountains.
Flee to the mountains, great. Well, you know, I used to live in the mountains, and it was a death trap up there because there was basically one road in and one road out. And it was in Crestline, Southern California, where they had the old fire about back in 2003. And
yes,
and it blacked out the Southern California sky for several days. And
yes,
you know, it took me half a day just to get off the mountain when they evacuated everybody, and then we were evacuated for 8 or 9 days. And
well, that also includes flee California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, and Florida. The mountains, meaning the Blue Ridge and the Appalachian, and get out of the cities because the cities are coming down.
Yeah. Great. Well,
we're going to be invaded in a very few short years. It'll be a planned thing.
Who are they going to design to invade us? Will it be Russia, China, Mexico?
China. China and Mexico, or China through Mexico.
Yeah, I've heard that.
By Mexico.
I've heard that Mexico is going to be a big player in the new.
Well, Mexico has already invaded us. They're already here.
Well,
they're talking about Texas seceding from the Union. Well, what they don't know is that when Texas secedes, it's a Mexican state already.
Yeah.
They already outnumbered the Mexicans are already the illegals and the legals. Now, there are many Mexicans, many Mexican friends of ours that are patriots of America. But the majority are illegal, and they don't belong here, and they're here to take over America at the right opportunity, and the opportunity is very near.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I think because of NAFTA and GATT and a lot of these things, a lot of the Mexicans that get caught up into the whole thing are indigenous people that have lost their farms and everything.
Yes.
And just like Ross Perot talked about in his campaign back in 93 or 94.
Right.
You know,
it's really
so,
not that they are the enemy.
Right, it's they're the victim, and not only that, but they're indigenous peoples, and for the last,
yes,
you know, before white man was ever here, they were nomadic, and whenever their
right
food supply or their crops go, they migrate. That's what they
yes
do.
But they have been told and taught and educated that Aztlan, which is those states that are southern states that I mentioned, belong to them, and that we stole them from them, and they want them back. So they've been, because Mexico's economy has been so decimated,
plundered.
Yes, then they c- come. They do the only thing that they know to do is go up to a nation that has plenty. And so I'm not at all condemning those people for what they do. I'm condemning those that have caused them such agony that they have to come up here. And I mean, that was their purpose in doing it.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, the reason for...
And to lower the wage standards and things here,
yes,
in the U.S. too.
Absolutely.
So, you know, with all of this, you know, we're going to have to wrap it up here. And I hate to cut you guys off, but we're pushing close to 3 hours here. So, is there any last ideas that you would like to add?
Go ahead, Eustace.
We're on the move.
What was that? I didn't hear you.
We're on the move every day.
You're on the move every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. And, you know, what do you think, other than moving to the mountains or rural areas, what else can people do to protect themselves? You know, obviously.
I have my home in Virginia. You know, I've lost everything, and it's empty. But Virginia is still there. It's still the same state.
All right. Well, thank you both, Eustace and Jesse, for coming on the show and taking up well over 2.5 hours of your time to get your word out. And you guys are doing amazing work. Eustace, you're an icon. And thank you so much for all the work you've done and bringing this information to the world. And we very much appreciate it.
Thank you too, Jan.